proponents of House Bill 1053.
Should we tell us just to...
Just for fun, yeah.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Regina Weisler, and I am the Administrator for Child Protection Services. I am here in support of House Bill 1053, which revises the requirements for abused and neglected children. I think it is important to understand the process that takes place prior to reaching the dispositional phase of the hearing process. Child Protection Services provide services to children in need of protection and their families. Services include responding to referrals alleging child abuse and neglect, alternative care, intensive family services, parenting, licensing, and adoption. Child Protection Services receives referrals of child abuse and neglect involving families who have a caretaking responsibility for their children. Referrals of abuse and neglect which meet the criteria for assignment are assigned either as a family assessment or as an investigation. Referrals appropriate for a family assessment involve incidents in which children do not appear to be in imminent danger and removal is unlikely. Assessments are designed to identify strengths and needs of the whole family. A social worker may work with the family for up to 6 months to address the issues and strengthen the family unit. An investigation is a fact-finding response to a referral. It includes gathering information through collateral contacts with law enforcement, with the schools, with medical personnel, and also with interviews with the children and their parents. If the facts of the investigation do not provide sufficient evidence that there has been abuse and neglect, the referral is unsubstantiated and the case is closed. However, if it is determined that the child has either been abused or neglected or is at risk of abuse or neglect, Child Protection Services will develop a plan with the parents to improve the situation while maintaining the children in the home. If the child appears to be in immediate danger, the child can be removed from the home either by order of a judge or by law enforcement taking protective custody. Child Protection Services does not have the authority to remove children from their homes. When court action is required, an abuse and neglect petition is filed with the court through the state's attorney. A series of hearings take place before the judge. The first is the 48-hour hearing, at which time evidence is presented regarding the reasons a child was removed, and a recommendation is made to the judge as to whether or not the child can safely return home. The judge decides at that time to either return the child or order the child to remain in placement and continue the court action. If the abuse and neglect action continues, the next hearing is the adjudicatory hearing. At this hearing, the judge determines if the parents have indeed abused or neglected their children. If the judge decides that evidence presented does not support that finding, the court action is ended and the case is dismissed. If the decision is that abuse and neglect has occurred according to the statutes, the judge then orders the parents and the child protection to work together to resolve the issues. The next court hearing is the dispositional hearing, which is the hearing to determine the outcome of the case for the children and for their parents. Options for the judge to consider are to return the child home, place the child with a relative, legal guardianship, long-term foster care, or in the most severe of cases, termination of parental rights with adoption. That brings us to the reasons for House Bill 1053. House Bill 1053 will revise the dispositional decrees entered by the court for abused and neglected children. In November of 1997, Congress passed the Adoption and Safe Families Act. This act required states to make legislative and policy changes regarding children in foster care and their permanency. Legislation was introduced in 1998 and 1999 to address the federal requirements. However, the final rules for the Adoption and Safe Families Act did not go into effect until March 2000, and those rules mandate some additional things that require legislative changes. The state will be penalized federal funding for non-compliance with the act. The previous rules allowed a child to be placed in long-term foster care if the court-approved plan included the name of the foster parent. Current statutes allow the court to order the placement of a child in long-term foster care and specify the name of the foster home. The new federal rule disallows use of federal funds for foster care in a case where the court orders placement in a long-term foster home and specifies the provider. The bill includes a change that will delete the option to order long-term foster care and name a specific provider. Instead, the Act requires the court to find that a compelling reason exists to order another planned permanent living arrangement if reunification, adoption, placement with a relative, or guardianship are not ordered as the permanent plan for the child. The bill includes the requirement that the court find that a compelling reason exists to place the child in the other permanent plan. The Act requires that a permanency hearing, or also called dispositional hearing, be held 12 months from the time a child enters foster care, and every 12 months thereafter while the child remains in the custody of the state. The bill amends the statutes that are missing those required provisions. The court must also make a determination during the dispositional hearings that the state, Child Protection Services, is making reasonable efforts to achieve the child's permanent plan as long as the child remains in the state's custody. The bill again amends those statutes that are missing those required provisions. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Other questions from the committee? Senator Sutton.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I have about three questions.
Go ahead.
I have permission to. In that six-month assessment period there, and there's been some, they do assessments, they do those kind of things. Is there any follow-up after that, or does another occurrence have to be reported before? I mean, after the, if the assessment can be up to 6 months, is there any check after that to ensure that everything is going okay, or?
The 6 month, you know, is nothing that's in statute. It's in our policy and procedure. And what we've just given our guidance to our social workers, saying that because an assessment does not reach the level of abuse and neglect required in an investigation, the issues are not as serious. So 6 months seems like a reasonable amount of time to work one-on-one with a family to strengthen what's going on. If for some reason at the end of 6 months we feel that another month, another 2 months would be acceptable to work with this family and they're willing to do it, we could do that.
Okay, and then if a child is reported in danger, I'm just wondering, at what point does it go to the court and what point does do the police come in and just remove the child or children? I mean, I would think that if they're in danger, is there, what, how do you define danger? Reported that there was sexual abuse or physical abuse, and at what level is the line drawn that we go in, because you can't do it, but right, the police go in and physically remove that child? Because if a child is in danger and you have to wait to go through the court system to get the child might not be there anymore.
Let me give you two examples. The example regarding law enforcement removing the child, this may be a phone call that comes into the police department at 2 a.m. in the morning saying, I'm concerned about the family next door. There's, you know, the kids are crying. There's a lot of noise. I'm not sure what's going on. Somebody needs to come and check this out. Law enforcement will go to that residence. If they find, and it happens all too often, that either every adult is intoxicated or sometimes completely passed out and little kids are running around crying, unattended, unsupervised, law enforcement will take those children immediately and notify the intake officer, explain the situation, and the judge will say, place them. So in an emergency situation like that, they take the kids, they call the judge, whatever time it is, it doesn't matter. The other situation would be is if we did an investigation, we substantiated abuse and neglect, and the family agreed to work with us, and we had a service agreement outline what they were going to do, what we were going to do to remedy the situation. And maybe a couple months into that agreement, the parents aren't following through, they're slamming the door in our face, we're still getting phone calls from schools and other concerned people about the care of the children, and we can't get the family to cooperate. We would approach the state's attorney. give the state's attorney our file and say, this was the investigation, this is what happened, this is what we've been trying to do. We feel these kids are at risk, and we would like to file a petition for abuse and neglect. The state's attorney will review that information, determine whether or not there's enough to initiate a petition, and then file that with the court. The judge will hear it, and at that time, we could make a recommendation for removal.
Okay, and if I may.
Go ahead.
Because I'm coming familiar with Statutes 25-9, you know, with relinquishing of parental rights due to the Baby Moses Bill, you know, I'm not an expert by any means, but I'm much more familiar with that statute. And understanding that it's important that if these children are in danger, that we do get them out of that dangerous situation and have an alternative for them. So one would be is if you have a family of kids, is it important for the agency to try to place those kids, one, together in a foster care to keep those? Because that might be the only support system those kids have, is to try to keep them together. And the second thing is once you probably terminate parental rights after a certain point and put them in permanent foster care and maybe adoption. Mm-hmm. Does it line up to that 6 month thing that we were talking about when the judge goes out to relinquish those parental rights? What's the framework on getting those parents back reunited with their kids if they change, or what's the process that, you know, your rights are relinquished, but keeping the family together and relinquishing of the rights I'm interested in?
When children are placed in foster care, we have a placement preference, and the first thing we do is we look for relatives.
Okay.
Because if there are appropriate relatives, that's where the children need to be, and hopefully within their same community so they don't have to change schools, those kinds of things. Then if that's not possible, then it's foster care. And we make every attempt to place the siblings together. Unless, unfortunately, in some cases, you may have siblings who are perpetrating sexually on each other. And it would be risky to place those children in a home, especially if the foster children have home, or the foster parents have children. So we really have to assess the best placement. Regarding the amount of time that we work with a family, in 1997, we went in and amended the statute that said for dispositional hearings, we should look at 12 months.
Okay.
It used to be 18, and then a year later when the Adoption and Safe Families Act, the time period was 12 months. So what the federal statute is saying and what our state statute says is that from the time a child enters foster care, that initial placement into foster care, you should work with that family up to 12 months. And at 12 months, you should be making a recommendation to the court that the child can return home. No, you know, we're almost ready to do it, but we need a couple more months to work with the family or a relative, or maybe we need to look at termination. And if a child has been in care 15 of the last 22 months, the federal mandate is that we file a petition for termination unless there is some compelling reason why that would not be in the best interest of the child.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Are there further questions from members of the committee? If not, then thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have further proponents of House Bill 1053? Hearing,
sorry.
Almost said it.
I thought there was three of us.
Please have a seat. Have you signed in at the door?
Yes, I have.
All right.
My name is Karen Hattervig, and I'm a board member of the South Dakota Coalition for Children. I'm not a registered lobbyist, but we have three children's bills up at the exact same time in three different committees this morning. So as a board member, I volunteered to come here and because we think this bill is very important to children. This bill, even though it's a federal mandate and the feds are telling us we have to do this, this is a good bill for children. Children need permanency, and as long as the state is trying to get them with their family, back with their family and working with them, and trying to keep them with relatives and trying to keep them together, we believe that's good for children. But there comes a point where children need to, you have to, you know, stop. And you have to decide this family just isn't going to work. And so we believe this is a good time period. This 12 months that's put in there is good for children, and we'd urge you to support this bill.
Any members of the committee have a question?
Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably this would go to Virginia. Are there any situations that you could describe for me and
stay there.
And the committee members in which a child that is in a long-term arrangement would not be available for adoption.
You can speak from there.
With a child in long-term foster care, one of the reasons that the statute or the federal mandate was changed is that the department wants, or the feds and the state want to always look at children, regardless of what permanent plan they may be in, as available for adoption. Doesn't matter if you're 2 or 17, you should always have adoption as an option.
Senator Olson.
I guess to follow up, but are there any conditions where the department would say this child should not be adopted out?
I think there are conditions that we would say, because of where the child is at emotionally and behaviorally, with all the things that are going on, that if we place that child for adoption, it would probably disrupt and be very damaging for the child and for that adopted family. And we have to do those assessments and make that judgment.
Thank you.
Senator Sutton.
And if I get, and Senator Olson, maybe this, are you getting at the point that what if you have a child that maybe is disabled or something like that, who cares for that child up? Because if nobody wants to adopt, if they don't, does that remain the state's responsibility?
That was basically my question. You know, I mean, we do have situations where we have kids that have, unfortunately, have been under state jurisdiction for a lengthy period of time, but they're educational needs, emotional needs, and so forth, maybe medical needs are so intricate and entwined that it would take a very special type of placement to maintain the services and be able to provide the emotional well-being of the child.
Do you have questions of Ms. Hedervig? Oh. Maybe you'd better move up here. Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize, but off Senator Olson's question, do we currently have any kids in custody that we can't place due to some of these instances?
Yes, we do. Right now, I can think of about 9 or 10 children right now that we have done either extensive efforts for recruitment of an adoptive family, and because of their emotional behavioral needs, some of them, we have a sibling group of 7 right now that we very much want to keep together, and we're having a difficult time finding a family who can take on 7 children. But there are some kids, as I mentioned, that because of all the issues that are going on with them right now, and based on our knowledge and our experience with adoption, if we tried to place that child and disrupt that child's plan right now, chances are that adoption would not succeed. And when that happens to a child, that is devastating.
And further questions?
And if I may, and I apologize, just thank you for your patience.
It's okay, we've got time, so if you want to just do that.
No, and it's just, where are they at? I mean, do you keep them in a foster home, or do they go to a private placement agency, or where do you keep these kids?
It's probably a mixture of settings. We have some who are in foster care. We have some in treatment foster care, which is a very therapeutic type of foster care. We have some who are placed in group and residential facilities, or at Sioux Falls Children's Home or Black Hills Children's Home, depending on their level of need and treatment.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Senator Olson.
Virginia, can you tell me how many children currently are under state jurisdiction?
A little over 1,000. About 150, 160 of those children are in relative care, and the rest of them are in alternative paid care.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Where has that number been? Historically, has it been level? Is it rising?
Unfortunately, it's rising. This is the most kids we have ever had in care and custody.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
Senator
to follow up on that, how many beds, I'll call them, do you have available? Do you have any extras at any of the facilities? I am very familiar with most of the facilities, but it's just crunch, if I'm not mistaken.
I do know that as of the end of January, we had 568 foster homes in the state that the Department of Social Services licensed. And we are always struggling to find additional homes. There are some homes who don't have placements, but it's because of the matching piece. You just can't take a child from one home and just place it in any foster home. You need to match up the needs of that child with the strengths of the family, or the child will disrupt. And again, that's damaging. It's very difficult to find placement in group and residential facilities. Again, there are openings, but does that opening and does that facility able to treat the needs of that child?
Further questions from the committee? Senator Sutton.
This is it, huh?
When you max out, I mean, what do you do when you get to a capacity level? I mean, is there something as a state, is this something that we need to address from a standpoint of I don't know, if building more facilities or trying to work with more private placement type agencies to try to, I mean, I'm just astounded that there's that many kids out there. I mean, I feel sorry for them because that's a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that maxed out is the correct term. I think, you know, I think Governor Janklow mentioned in his State of the State, you know, how important it is, you know, for recruitment of foster families for the state agencies and anything that can be done there so we can do better matching. We are currently working with the privates, the group and residential facilities, and looking at the treatment that they're providing and trying to get a better handle on what's available and how we can do better placements. So I don't know that we're maxed out. We're just trying to do a better job of matching children with the right kind of family or facility.
All right, then, are there further questions from the committee? If not, are there further proponents of House Bill 1053? Proponents of House Bill 1053. Hearing none, we'll close the committee discussion and or action. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot there couldn't be. Are there opponents of House Bill 1053? All right. Who is it? Are there proponents of House Bill 1053? Opponents, I'm sorry.
Very positive.
I have seemed to have a positive attitude about this bill.
Your bills in judiciary might be in real trouble.
All right, then. There aren't any opponents to House Bill 1053 present. We'll close to committee discussion and or action. Senator Sutton.
Mr. Chair, I'd move a due pass on House Bill 1053.
Move Sutton. Second Ham, do pass on House Bill 1053. The clerk will call the roll.
Dietrich?
Aye.
Ham?
Aye.
McIntyre?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson?
Right.
No. Aye. All right, then, House Bill 1053 will go to the floor.
I don't know. Does somebody want to talk about it?
All you have to do is say no, and it won't. All right. House Bill 1053 will go to the floor with a due pass. I could, since we aren't going to do Senate Bill 231, I could, I beg your pardon? I announced at the beginning of the meeting that it is going to be deferred until Monday next, which is,
I don't know what the date is. No.
Oh, okay.
February 5th.
I could use a motion to adjourn.
Adjourn.
Moved adjourned, seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.